Hey fam, what's up? This is FaZe. I want to thank all y'all for coming in and listening to me. I know you didn't have to do it, but you did it anyway. And thank you. You can reach me at FaZe380, or you can come and join me at anchor.fm/FaZe5. That's where you can join my little rendezvous in the thought or process as we ride down the road to the world of destruction. Come in and join me. If you got a comment, you can post it at the bottom. You got a voice that you want to be heard, just send it to my Instagram, FaZe380. Everybody do their part, and the world can be a better place. I ain't here for no drama. I ain't here for no problems. I ain't here for no static. I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn. And I'm here to learn.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh.
Figure this out now. So 40 states, damn near 30, I think it's 30 states have declared a national emergency for an event that's not supposed to take place until April. What the heck is going on here? So you are making a preemptive national emergency declaration without there being any actual emergency. Something ain't right with this, y'all. They got to talking about the people that may pop up and the people that may want to. It ain't never been no problem no other time. That's the thing that we talking about. Why are the states declaring national emergencies for something that has not happened yet? And furthermore, for something that is a natural occurrence that we've all used to been watching our whole lives. Somebody tell me why.
Second.
So it's become abundantly clear to me that a lot of black people these days are still confused as to how we've made so many strides over the years, have done so much good in this world, yet somehow the community is still at a standstill. I can go through a whole list of reasons for why that is, but quite frankly, I don't have the time nor the fucking patience, so like a line segment, I'm just gonna get to the point. Number one, y'all are too damn inclusive. Y'all want to include anybody and everybody into every fucking thing that we do, yet somehow when these same people come and steal from your culture, profit off your culture, build a platform perpetrating your culture, you all of a sudden want to be offended when they didn't save a seat for you at the table that was never meant for you in the first place. Number two, we lack unity. On top of that, y'all spend so much time and energy fighting each other and promoting negativity that by the end of the fucking day, nobody got the time, energy, or the focus to actually fight for what's important, which allows the power structure to throw rocks, hide its fucking hands, and allow y'all to blame each other for it. In this day and age, ain't no way in hell we could accomplish what Martin, Malcolm, and Rosa did back in the day, because not only do we not have a commitment to each other, but ain't nobody willing to sacrifice a damn thing due to the fact that everybody's now comfortable under the white power structure. Back then, if we agreed collectively as a community that we were gonna boycott or cancel some shit, literally everybody fell in line and didn't ask no questions. And whoever didn't fall in line, you better believe that it was gonna be smoke as soon as people saw you and it was gonna be furniture getting moved. Number four, y'all always want to be at the front for everybody's fight against oppression, but yet somehow when it comes time for these same groups of people to return the favor, now all of a sudden you out here like, where the fuck is my backup? I love to talk about intersectionality and how we gotta fight for other oppressed and other minority groups while completely ignoring the alarming number of individuals amongst these groups who are also anti-black. Now that's not to say there aren't individuals that are fully committed to the struggle, because there is, however, the exception is not the rule, and if it was, we wouldn't still be having this damn conversation. Every single time one of these fucking golf balls get on here doing a little dancey dance, speak with a little slang, along with the little bit of drip that they stole from you, here y'all come with the fucking invitation to the cookout. Stop. he got to be damn near exceptional just to get even slightly noticed. Yet y'all want to reward them for mediocrity doing the bare minimum and give them everything except your fucking social security number? At this point, I just want everybody to be honest and stop pussyfooting around. You don't give a fuck about black liberation and you don't give a damn about dismantling white supremacy as long as you living comfortable underneath it. There ain't no way in hell, ain't even no way in heaven that we still going to church to pray the problems away and going to the polls to vote the problems away while we collectively are sitting at a damn near $5 trillion net worth. People be so quick to bring up the topic about reparations, but I have yet to hear just one constructive idea of what we would do with the money if we actually got it. Ain't heard nobody talk about buying the land back that was stolen from us, nor rebuilding black Wall Streets all over America. Hell, I ain't even heard anybody even talk about how we gonna invest it. You know, build banks, schools, supermarkets, hospitals, you know, the things that literally make a community. We literally got more black college graduates nowadays than ever. Lawyers, doctors, engineers, you name it. And yet somehow they're still unemployed, but we gonna blame that on the plaster people? Y'all think that using 28 to 29 days out of the year to educate people about history that they never gave a fuck about and were more than capable to look up themselves is gonna put us closer to where we need to be? I love y'all, but if we gonna really change the situation, I'm gonna need for y'all to get serious.
April 8th, 2024. The total solar eclipse is all the hype right now. I've been seeing so many videos on this eclipse and everybody has been on point in regards to the occurrence of the eclipse. So we know that this eclipse is making an X over the United States in a particular area. But what I was going into prayer for was because I needed a deeper understanding spiritually of what this X actually means outside of what we physically can see. So we know what we have to look at the time frame between the first mark and then the second mark that's making an X. And yes, I do know that there is another eclipse that makes the like the olive symbol. So we know that olive means power or force or strong authority, okay? But it's something about the actual X that marks the spot. So the Tav, the X that is making, it's a Tav symbol. Tav means mark, okay? So there was a 7-year period between 2017 and 2024. And I went into prayer about that. So this is what I was shown. I was shown that we know that the number 7 means the number of completion, perfection, and holiness. So what exactly was completed? What exactly is completed? And so looking deeper at the number 7 means rest, cessation of work, wholeness, completeness, being right, order, stability, and holiness. We also know that in Revelation talks about the 7 spirits. It talks about the 7 feasts, the 7 churches, the 7 stars, the 7 lampstands, the 7 seals, the 7 trumpets, the 7 bowls. And also I did discover that there were 7 priests that marched around the wall of Jericho. Then there were 7 priests that blew a trumpet, blew a shofar. I was led to Revelation 7, 1 through 8. So we know that Tav, this mark over the United States, means a mark. So where do we see mark in scriptures? Revelation 7, 1 through 8 is talking about the sealing of the servants. The angel of the east cried out to the 4 angels to not harm the earth and the sea until the servants have been sealed. Till the servants have been marked. Okay? Where else have we heard this? So follow me over to Ezekiel 9, 4 through 7. And Yahuwah said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. And to the others he said, in mine hearing, go ye after him through the city and smite. So it says, let not your eye spare your, neither have pity. So now we got to go and look a little deeper. This 7-year period is a mark. And I remember that all of my dreams of an eclipse, there has been a mark, and I kept saying, there is the sign before I woke up. I'm also reminded of the time that I was awakened in 2017. 2017, I had a visitation of my two angels. These two angels stood at the foot of my bed, and the one angel touched my forehead, and I went back out to sleep. Understand that alongside of all the other reasons and meanings of this eclipse, that 7-year period was the marking of the servants, the 144,000. So we know that once these servants are marked, then judgment can hit the land. So many people have said that this is the time of judgment, but the deeper understanding is that the servants have been marked by April 8, 2024. It is going to start a probationary period, which is the number 40. So I'm going to do another video, because this video that I'm going to do in regards to the number 40 is very telling, okay? Good day, beloved soldiers. I have a message to the chosen, the first fruit, the 144,000, the wise virgins. On Friday, I was doing a heavy cleaning. I was cleaning, moving things, cleaning behind things, washing rugs, mopping the floor. And during that time, I had my worship music playing. As I was cleaning, the Father said to me, he said, sing. And so I started singing while I was cleaning. And then the Father said, do you know what you're doing? I said, yes, Father, I'm cleaning. I'm cleaning. He said, no. He said, you're nesting. I said, I'm nesting. He said, you're nesting. So he prompted me to do a deep study of nesting behavior. And it says, nesting behavior refers to an instinct or an urge in pregnant animals associated with the increase of estradiol to prepare a home for the upcoming newborn. Nest building provides protection against predators and competitors that mean to exploit or kill the baby. So then I looked up the word estradiol. I knew estradiol is a hormone in women, but it says estradiol is responsible for maintaining a proper environment for oocytes in the ovary. Okay, so oocytes are the eggs that are in the ovaries. But then he said to me, he said, the seeds. I was like, oh, I get it, I get it, I get it, I get it. So then he gave me Revelation 14:3. And they sing, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no man could learn the song except that they accept the 144,000, even they that had been purchased out of the earth. So people, chosen ones, Father says we're nesting. We are nesting. You are in the stage of preparing your environment for the newborn. We know what the newborn is. The newborn is New Jerusalem. So the Father says, you're nesting. You're nesting. You are nesting. And when he spoke to me and told me to sing, he showed me that you are singing a new song. And if you get what this means spiritually, then that's what he is saying to us. So you all take care. You be blessed.
Correspondent, war correspondent Patrick Lancaster was all set to head to Avdiivka, where, of course, you have the fall of that city. The Ukrainian forces have basically succumbed to Russian advances there. They are leaving and surrendering, and that town is now under Russian control. Patrick was all set to get on the road to go bring us a report from there, when suddenly a massive attack, a barrage of American NATO weapons launched into civilian areas in Donetsk. And Patrick just filed this short report for us in the aftermath of civilian casualties. Take a look. Hello, Redacted. I'm Patrick Lancaster, right now in the center of Donetsk, from the intersection of Panfilyeva and Universitetskaya. And unfortunately, on the hood there, you see a family member checking on the body of their loved one, who was just killed by a Ukrainian 155-millimeter shell raining down out of the sky. And a second to the person, as well as entering four other civilians. I say Ukrainian 155-millimeter because that's who fired it, but the fact is that's a Western-supplied, NATO-supplied 155-millimeter artillery shell that Ukraine would not have if the Russians not supplying this report. The Western tax dollars killed that woman there and injured and killed all the others as well here on the streets of Donetsk. That is what the Western tax dollars are doing here in Donetsk. The supply of weapons, lethal aid as they call it, from the West to Ukraine is killing the civilians here on the streets of Donetsk. Something needs to be done. The Western mainstream media is not going to be showing you this information. Only we are. Think for yourself. Пармая откуда это стреляет?
Украина откуда стреляет? Я сама скоро возьму автомат и пойду уже захватывать. Это уже просто невозможно. 10 лет вот этих обстрелов. Вы поставите, здесь мирное население, здесь нет военных частей. Я здесь живу недалеко. Здесь нет ни одной военной части. Здесь нет ни одного военного. Здесь мирные жители, Министерство образования, которое обеспечивает обучение детей Донецкой Народной Республики. И их обстреливали. За что? Которые стоят в тылу, держат тыл, и их еще обстреливают. А мирные люди, которые шли просто в магазин. За что их?
Вот такие были осколки. С этого осколка от 155-го снаряда.
Okay, so I was just back to my apartment, and as soon as I got in the door, I was back from filming the woman, the civilians injured, killed in the center. Now, as soon as I got in the door, two huge explosions happened. Looked out my window, saw black smoke. Just moments ago, there was an attack by Ukrainian forces. This what appears to be a massive HIMARS rocket.
Fluoride, bad for us. That's what's being litigated in California right now in a major lawsuit that is not getting a lot of attention. Surprisingly, Derek Brose has been following this acutely. He's asked to come on Redacted and tell us about it, and we said yes, absolutely. We want to know everything about that. Closing arguments are happening in the case today in San Francisco, so it's a good day to talk about it. Derek, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me and for giving a little bit of a signal boost to this story.
Right. Okay, so take us through it. Why is this such a landmark case and why do we not know about it? Can you give us a little bit of the history and the history of it not only happening but being silenced?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a law that was passed in the United States called the Toxic Substance Control Act, which allows regular people, American citizens, to petition the EPA if they believe that a chemical or a compound has been proven to be toxic. And in this case, the Fluoride Action Network, Moms Against Fluoridation, and a few different plaintiffs, mothers whose children have been affected by water fluoridation, they filed a petition under TSCA to the EPA in 2016, essentially arguing that the data proves that fluoride is a neurotoxin and that it affects the IQ of children, especially during pregnancy and then postnatal. And the EPA rejected the petition, and this led to a lawsuit. So this has been going on since 2016, 2017, and it's essentially just kind of been the courtroom proceedings. But the first phase of the trial actually began in summer 2020. Of course, it was COVID lockdown, so it took place via Zoom. And I was reporting on it for The Last American Vagabond, doing live tweeting while watching Zoom and just writing articles. And in that first phase of the trial, there were some pretty big revelations that I can share about today. But essentially what happened in 2020, Judge Edward Chin, the federal judge who's overseeing this case, he decided that since the U.S. government's National Toxicology Program, the NTP, was at that time currently studying fluoride, they were doing what's called a monograph. They were doing this massive review of all the data on fluoride, and they were focusing on just the low risk of bias, high quality studies, and trying to, you know, decide, is this really a toxin or is it not? And so the judge at that time said, you know what, this NTP report's going on right now. Let's just put everything on hold for a moment. Let's wait for this report to come out. And well, fast forward, here we are 4 years later, and the report still hasn't been officially released. But in that time, because of the lawsuit, one of the beautiful things of this lawsuit, and one of the other things that makes it historic, is the Fluoride Action Network and their lead attorney, Michael Conant, who's a brilliant attorney, they were able to do discovery and to file open records requests to get all kinds of data from the government. And in that process, they obtained emails from the CDC's Oral Health Division, as well as emails that mention U.S. Assistant Secretary of Health Rachel/Richard Levine intervened to prevent the NTP study from coming out. These emails, which we've released in the last year or so, show that the NTP scientists, U.S. government scientists, wanted to release the report in May 2022, but these elements of the U.S. government prevented it from coming out. And the only reason we know that is because of these emails that came out in the lawsuit. And
Wait. That's shocking. Is no stranger to giving substances with wild abandon to every human body. And so what was the justification for holding back this report?
So they, you know, the U.S. government has publicly said they don't think it's ready for release. It's not complete. The evidence is not clear. It's inconclusive, these sort of things. But the interesting thing, because of these emails, again, we actually have the emails of the scientists themselves. So while the scientists at the National Toxicology Program were saying our study's ready for release May 2022, they had already set the date for publication. They were going to publish it on their servers. And then while they're having that conversation over at the CDC and HHS, they're saying this report's not going to happen. And well, when he specifically mentions Rachel Levine will not let the report come out.
That's not how a research report works. You don't run it through the politicians to see if they like it. If the scientists think it's done, then we should be able to see it. That in and of itself is shocking. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, it's important to kind of break that down. And I think that the most important point here to highlight is, okay, so what was the scientists' conclusion, right? What did they conclude? What did they conclude? We do know because, again, because of this study, and now that we've resumed the second phase, Judge Chin did allow the NTP report in its draft form, since it's never been officially released. He did allow it into evidence, and that report says fluoride exposure is associated with lower IQ in children. It couldn't be more clear as day as that, and that is what this whole case is revolving around. Can the Fluoride Action Network prove to Judge Edward Chin, as they've been trying for the last 2 weeks in San Francisco, to show him that the data proves that we have more than enough evidence, as the NTP, the government's own scientists, have said, fluoride has an association with lower IQ in children, specifically when pregnant mothers are consuming it, and then of course postnatal, it has a very detrimental impact on our neurocognitive development. And so I actually, as you mentioned, have been in San Francisco the last 2 weeks, and I had the opportunity to interview three of the expert witnesses, three of the scientists that were presenting for the Fluoride Action Network. And if I could just briefly, I'd like to quote directly from them, because I'm not a scientist, I'm just a journalist myself. But I asked Dr. Howard Hu, for example, and he said, quote, yes, I would say that in my view, the evidence is quite persuasive that there is a negative impact of fluoride exposure on the neurodevelopment of children, particularly the research that's been coming out in prenatal exposure. And then I asked Dr. Bruce Lamphere the same question, and he said, quote, well, what we found, whether we looked at urinary fluoride levels from the mom as a measure or water fluoride, was that in every case, we saw IQ deficits in the children. So this is why you're not hearing about this story. Because this poison is in the water, and your taxpayer dollars are paying for it, and there's elements of the U.S. government trying to prevent this study from coming out. You know, of course, we have other studies and other data, but they know that this study coming from the U.S. government's own branch of scientists would be pretty powerful and pretty impactful. So instead, they've done everything they can to prevent it from being released to the public.
Now, the plaintiffs in this case that are suing the EPA, what do they want? Do they want it removed, or do they want damages, or all of those things?
They're just, at this point, this is just specifically a suit to... So if you do win in the petition process, under TSCA, the EPA has several different actions that they can take. And one of those, yes, would be banning it or regulating it. As it is now, I think that the case here is trying to prove that we can prove that fluoride is causing harm. We might not know the exact level, but if we're going to err on the side of the precautionary principle or what the EPA calls the uncertainty factor, which is when you consider the most vulnerable populations, then it should be banned. You know, even if you, this is what the process they've done with lead, what they've done with mercury. And in fact, I think it's probably appropriate to say that fluoride is the new lead, fluoride is the new mercury, because two of the expert witnesses that spoke at this trial for the plaintiffs, Dr. Bruce Lamphere and Dr. Philippe Branjing, are the leading experts who helped develop the EPA's own regulatory protocols for lead and for mercury. And in this case, they're speaking up and saying this is even more harmful. This is causing damage internally. I could speak more about, you know, when a mother, like they showed data showing that as the mother progresses through a pregnancy, by the third trimester, as she's drinking more water and consuming more to feed her baby, if she's drinking fluoridated water, she's increasing the amount of fluoride in her body. It stores in her bones. And then as her baby starts to form its skeletal structure, it's going to pull all that fluoride right out of mom's bones into its body, pass through the blood-brain barrier, into the placenta. And it's showing that there is an impact on cognitive development.
I believe whole house filtration systems, though, do they filter out fluoride? A lot of them do, right?
So the only thing that we know that does filter out fluoride, and it's not even, I would say, 100%, depending on the quality of the filter, is reverse osmosis.
Right.
So reverse osmosis will remove everything. Of course, it removes like everything. So if you're doing that, it's advisable to kind of remineralize your water with some trace minerals or something. But yeah, you could, if you have the money and you have the ability, you can buy shower filters, you can buy house filters, you can go buy the 5-gallon jugs and fill up at the local water filtration system. But as is typical with these kind of situations, the people who are, let's say, lower socioeconomic status, don't have extra cash to spend, they're going to be the ones who are most impacted by this, because you are showering it, you're cooking in it, you're drinking it. If you're eating processed foods, it more than likely has fluoridated water. When you go out to eat at a restaurant, more than likely has fluoridated water being given to you. And fluoride is also in pesticides. So it's not just, this case is focused on water fluoridation, but there's actually so many different exposures that, at least in the United States, that we're all facing.
Can you remind us all why the United States has fluoride in the water to begin with?
Sure. So in the 1940s, you know, there's actually a really great book I'll recommend for those who want to do a deep dive more than we have time today. It's called The Fluoride Deception by journalist Christopher Bryson. But he goes through the history and actually, you know, there's some connections to the Manhattan Project and the U.S. nuclear program. Not only were they studying uranium, but they were also studying fluoride, and they understood the impact way back then. There were some incidents where fluoride, because what we're calling fluoride, there is naturally occurring fluoride, calcium fluoride, sodium fluoride, and it's important to know that all of the types of fluoride have been associated with harm. So just because it's quote unquote naturally occurring doesn't mean it doesn't cause harm. But most of what we're talking about, what's added to the U.S. water supply, is hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is a byproduct of aluminum phosphate mining. And in the past, these companies, they would have had to pay to dispose of this toxin. Instead, now they're getting paid by cities around the United States to add it to the water. And so in the 40s and the 50s, there was quite a bit of propaganda. There was the American Dental Association working with Edward Bernays, working with Alcoa, which is the aluminum, representing the aluminum industry. They came together and started getting studies produced that claimed that because fluoride hardens the bones, which it does, that it's good for the teeth. And thus, you know, if we're going to help all these poor kids in the rural areas who don't have proper dental care, we need to start fluoridating the water. And much like vaccines, the CDC, if you go on their website, they currently promote water fluoridation as one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. So there are some major influences of people that would like for this story to stay suppressed and would like for water fluoridation to continue happening, not only because then the companies who produce this toxic waste would have to figure out how they're going to dispose of it without getting paid to, you know, put it in the water, but also the potential here, you asked about money earlier, if the judge does find in the case of the plaintiffs, you would imagine that the American Dental Association, the CDC, the FDA, and all the various branches of government who've been promoting this for generations now, going on 80 years, would potentially be opened up to class action lawsuits.
Tell me why they envy me. Lord, I pray you defend me from my enemy. Defend me from my enemy. Defend me from my enemy, yeah. Defend me from my enemy. Defend me, na na na. Si ou em la gasa de gade kote mi ve.
The lies we were told about the COVID vax were so grotesque and so overwhelming that it's almost hard to watch them just 2 years later. But we should, because the people who told them are still effectively in charge. Here's one. It's from 2021. This is CDC Director Rochelle Walensky telling us, informing us, that anyone who takes the vax and then somehow manages to get infected, but that would never happen. But if it did happen, that person would not be able to spread the virus to anyone else. We promise. Watch.
Can you, if you were to get infection with and vaccinated, could you give it to somebody else? Were you silently able to spread it? Those data were not covered in the clinical trials, but now data have emerged again that have demonstrated that even if you were to get infected during post-vaccination, that you can't give it to anyone else.
Why hasn't she been charged with a crime? Well, she never will be. And of course, just a few years later, it turns out the whole thing was a disaster of world historic proportions. Books will be written about this at some point when we can tell the truth about it. A lot of people were killed or permanently disabled by it. How many is the question? How many people were hurt by the vax? How many people were killed by the vax that was mandatory? We just spoke to Brett Weinstein on this show, Professor Brett Weinstein, he told us he's seen research that up to 17 million people across the globe may have died from it. Watch.
I was recently at a conference in Romania on the COVID crisis, and so there was a lot of work trying to unpack what we actually understand, and I saw a credible estimate of something like 17 million deaths globally from this technology. So
17 million deaths from the COVID vax?
Well, when you scale up to billions, it's not hard to reach a number like that with a technology this dangerous. Now, to your deeper question, I think let's steel man.
Just for perspective, I mean, that's like the death toll of a global war.
Yes, absolutely. This is a great tragedy of history. So that proportion.
17 million globally. Now, that's an estimate. And the interesting and most shocking fact, actually, is that we don't really know because no one seems to be keeping track, at least in this country, which is amazing considering what our government keeps track of. The Biden administration knows exactly how many transgender heart surgeons there are, how many bisexual Samoan airline pilots. They keep track of it with Nazi-like precision. But how many people were killed or disabled by the COVID vax? They don't care, so they're not keeping track of those numbers. So it falls to people who don't work for the U.S. government. And one of them is a man called Steve Kirsch, who's a MIT-trained inventor, by the way, a longtime donor to the Democratic Party, not a lifelong right-wing extremist or anything, a businessman. But he has now dedicated his time and his ample energy to figuring out exactly what the COVID vax did to this country and the world. He's the founder of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund. Steve Hirsch joins us now. Steve, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Tucker. It's great to be here.
So before you tell us what you found, and you've been working on this, it seems to me, day and night for a couple of years, tell us your background, because you don't have a background in public health. It's sort of a weird life trajectory that you've had, which I think makes the story more compelling. How did you get to where you are now, to doing this?
Well, as a young kid, I had a summer school probability course when I was in high school, and that was just really game-changing for me. I was fascinated by math and just really excelled in math. And I went to MIT, got a couple of degrees from MIT, left MIT, started about seven different high-tech companies, a couple of them had billion-dollar market caps. And then what happened is COVID essentially closed my business and that we couldn't go into work. And so I was looking to do whatever I could to make a difference so that I could go back to work and everybody else could as well. And so I started looking at early treatments and started the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund, raised about $5 million. And we funded research on drugs like fluvoxamine, which was featured on 60 Minutes. And then there was, of course, this work on the vaccine in the background, and we were all very hopeful that the vaccine would be successful.
Yes.
And so it came out, and the FDA said that they have tested it, and it's totally safe, and everybody should get it, and uses this new novel technology. And of course, I'm a technologist, so I'm always looking for something that's new, better technology. And so they said, super safe, everybody should get it. And I said, look, even though that I knew about early treatments and I knew that fluvoxamine was effective in reducing long-haul COVID, and if you got it early, people didn't seem to suffer from COVID. Even though I had that, I said, why don't I get an extra protection? So I myself was vaccinated in March of 2021, and I got two shots of Moderna. And then about a month later, I started hearing horror stories from my friends. I heard from one person who had three relatives who were perfectly healthy, and all three of them died a week after they got the vaccine. And I said to her, well, I said, that's impossible. That's statistically like so unlikely that it could never happen if it was caused by the vaccine. And she said, yeah, but they're dead. And then a week later, our carpet cleaner comes at our door, and he's wearing a mask. And I give him a hard time. I say, hey, don't you know if you take the vaccine, you don't have to wear a mask? And he said, well, I wasn't able to take both shots. And I said, why not? He said, well, after the first shot, 2 minutes after the first shot, he had a heart attack. And he spent the night in the hospital, and he has never been the same since that time. And so that that was the wake-up call for me when I saw it happening in my own personal circle, because I was believing the whole narrative. I was selling the whole narrative until this guy shows up at my door to clean my carpet saying he had a heart attack 2 minutes after he got the shot, and he's never been the same, and his wife had symptoms too. So that's what led me to start to look and see somebody's lying to me, and I don't think it's my friends. And so I started looking at the various data. I looked at all sorts of data. I looked at every piece of data I could lay my hands on, and it was all the same. It was all showing that these shots are causing a level of adverse events as well as death, morbidity and mortality beyond anything that's ever been seen before.
Wait, can I ask you to pause right there? So, you're describing pure intellectual inquiry motivated by, you know, curiosity and concern, which is great. But you're also doing this in a context, and the context is the spring of 2021, where you are not allowed to question the vaccine if you want to remain friends with people, if you want to be considered a serious person, if you don't want to be trashed on Wikipedia as you have been. And so you spend your whole life gathering accolades, going to, you know, impressive schools, making a ton of money, being celebrated in the press. And you must know on some level, because you're smart, that if you start talking about this stuff, all of that is over and you're going to be a thought criminal and people are going to look at you sideways. Did you know that?
No, I had no idea. I thought that if I told the truth and I let people know about the facts and the data that I had uncovered, that people would basically say, oh, you're right. This looks like a big problem. We need to stop the shots. And I told my wife after, you know, before I did this, I said, hey, this will be over in like 2 weeks. I mean, yeah, if the data is so clear that this is going to be done in 2 weeks. And we're still at it after all this time.
So tell us what you found and what you have found and what your conclusions are.
Well, what I found was all the data was consistent with this vaccine being the most dangerous vaccine of all time. I mean, there are more reports on this vaccine in the VAERS system, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It's the official system for reporting adverse events for a vaccine. It's set up by the U.S. government. It's run by the U.S. government. And there are more reports for the COVID vaccine than for all vaccines in history combined. And not only that, but we found out later that this VAERS system, which they set up to monitor for safety, had triggered 770 different safety signals. Now, normally, a vaccine only will trigger zero safety signals. It'd be really unusual for a vaccine to trigger any safety signals in VAERS, especially because the way they define these safety signals makes it almost impossible for a vaccine to trigger a safety signal. But this vaccine triggered 770 safety signals. So what did the CDC do about it? They basically told no one. The only reason that we even found out about it is because someone issued a Freedom of Information Act request to the CDC requesting, could you show me the output of the analysis of the safety signal analysis you're supposed to do? And so they got back a spreadsheet showing 770 safety signals were triggered. That is mind-blowing. That is not a 3-alarm fire. That is a 770-alarm fire.
Bill Gates' lab-grown meat causes cancer in humans who consume it, according to a disturbing new study. Synthetic meat has been heavily promoted by Bill Gates and the globalist elites at the WEF as the solution to so-called climate change. However, this fake food has now been shown to cause cancer via immortalized cell lines used to manufacture it. Not content with poisoning your heart with mRNA vaccines while he sends your grandma to a death panel for being useless, Gates wants you to sit down at the dinner table to eat his repulsive-tasting synthetic meat, which just so happens to riddle you with incurable cancers. The National Pulse shined a light on this issue in February, citing a Bloomberg story about Gates' fake meat crusade. The February story by Joe Fassler explained why Bill Gates' fake meat companies use immortalized cell lines for their products. Normal meat cells don't just keep dividing forever. To get the cell cultures to grow at rates big enough to power a business, several companies are quietly using what are called immortalized cells, something most people have never eaten intentionally, Fassler wrote. While immortalized cell lines are a staple of medical research, Fassler noted that these are technically precancerous and can be fully cancerous at times. The problem is that the materials used to make the product, immortalized cell lines, replicate forever, just like cancer, which means, in effect, that they are cancer.
Industry types are confident that eating such products poses no risk, but it's not difficult to see, even if the products are proven safe, how people might be put off by the thought that they're eating a glorified tumor. The dangers of fake meat made using immortalized cell lines come from the fact that long-term safety data for its consumption are not yet available. You shouldn't be surprised. After all, it's not the first time Gates has attempted to push an experimental product on the masses in order to generate enormous profits for himself and catastrophic results for the rest of humanity. The Furin Cleavage site gave the game away regarding the COVID vaccine's real origins, with a sequence patented by Moderna 3 years before COVID was even a thing, found in the virus's DNA. As for Gates' fake meat, it is the immortalized cells that have exposed the elite's agenda. Fassler pointed out that immortalized cells in these products can multiply aggressively and indefinitely if placed under the right conditions. This brings with it safety, but also image concerns, he wrote. To back up Fassler's points, the National Pulse cited an instance where New York City Democrat Mayor Eric Adams, a vegan, attended a VIP event sponsored by a cultured salmon manufacturer, Wildtype. While several attendees enjoyed tasting the cultured salmon, Adams excused himself and left the event without taking a single bite of the fake fish. Aside from the immortal cells in lab-grown meat being carcinogens, ingredients in these products that are meant to mimic the taste and texture of the real thing can also cause all manner of serious health issues. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Children's Health Defense reported on the issue in September 2022, focusing on the fake meat products from the California-based Impossible Foods. The Health Freedom Group cited a study conducted by the company involving rats fed with the Impossible Burger. The research was done under the assumption that the fake meat products would have minimal impacts, if none at all. But the study's findings came out very differently. The study found that soy leg hemoglobin, SLH, caused inexplicable alterations within rat biology. Rats fed SLH experienced unexplained weight gain and changes in blood, indicating the onset of inflammation or kidney disease and possible signs of anemia. SLH, which is derived from genetically modified yeast, is responsible for giving the Impossible Burger its meaty taste and making it bleed like real meat when cut. Another ingredient in the Impossible Burger that caused health issues is herbicide-tolerant soy protein, HTSP. Impossible Foods introduced HTSP to the burger recipe in 2019 to improve the product's texture and avoid gluten. As a result, fake meat burgers can contain residues of the herbicide glyphosate sprayed on soybeans, which are then processed into HTSP. Tests commissioned by the advocacy group Moms Across America confirmed this finding. Based on tests performed at the Iowa-based Health Research Institute laboratories, Impossible Burgers had glyphosate levels of 11.3 parts per billion. This was 11 times higher than the glyphosate detected on the Beyond Meat burger, which used plant-based ingredients that did not undergo genetic modification. Why are the elites so determined to poison us? Could it have anything to do with the depopulation agenda the elites at the WEF are becoming more and more comfortable speaking about? Gates is also becoming increasingly arrogant and no longer feels any shame whatsoever about openly broadcasting his real intentions for the human race. Gates, who was divorced by his wife because of his relationship with dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, visited the University of Edinburgh's Langhill Farm to launch the school's Global Academy of Agriculture and Food Security. Rather than beating around the bush and obfuscating as he used to do before the COVID pandemic, Gates appeared comfortable bragging about pumping mRNA vaccines into farm animals destined for dinner plates to force jab the unvaccinated.
Well, the Gates Foundation has partnered with DFID on a great number of things, and among those are work we do together on livestock, helping animals survive either by having vaccines or better genetics, helping them be more productive. It's making a big difference. You know, I was down in Ethiopia seeing how chickens are out there laying more eggs, getting more nutrition, and even some small savings into the household. So Edinburgh happens to be where a lot of the world's best work on this is done, and that's why DFID and the Gates Foundation are funding scientists here.
Unless all animals, including food animals, are jabbed with Big Pharma's latest poisons, the food supply will remain dirty in Gates' view. Only he and his globalist minions can sanitize nature with new chemicals and DNA modification techniques, which they are also trying to do to humans. As he usually does, Gates started all this by playing God with the lives of other people, experimenting on the Third World, which he views as his personal fiefdom. According to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., anybody who is prepared to allow Bill Gates to dictate world and US health policy should take a long, hard look at his record in Africa. Perhaps millions of children have died unnecessarily, according to Kennedy Jr., who shared information from a peer-reviewed publication in a respected journal. Anyone defending Bill Gates and the World Health Organization needs to explain Morganson et al. 2017. This is a peer-reviewed publication in a respected journal by leading scientists describing outcomes akin to genocide, said Kennedy Jr. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. also slammed Gates and his messianic conviction that he is ordained to save the world with technology. Vaccines for Bill Gates are a strategic philanthropy that feed his many vaccine-related businesses, including Microsoft's ambition to control a global VAC-ID enterprise and give him dictatorial control over global health policy, the spear tip of corporate neo-imperialism. Kennedy Jr.
Now we see how Gates and all this other stuff is wicked and crooked, right? Wicked and crooked. Crooked and wicked. So y'all ain't catch that right when he said about Ethiopia. And it's always somewhere in the third country, Ethiopia and Africa, that they experiment children and our family, and they so happy about it because they put in the process of genocide and killing people, and you seeing these people and you seeing the outcome of what's going on with the meat and stuff. You see when he heard, when he said, what when the rats ate the meat, what happened? They caught cancer. So why is this dude still relevant in the world, making decisions, making power moves? Is he one of those untouchables? And we see his name pop up all the time with some old wicked stuff he got going on in the name of saving humanity. These are the crafty council, and I keep telling Africa, y'all. Africa's still dealing with that World Health crap. The Bill Gates crap, the Fauci crap. Y'all allow these people to come into y'all land and country and spread y'all children with these diseases, thinking they gonna do right. They gonna do right for. And the Most High gave you all the riches and minerals of the world to cleanse yourself and your mind and your body. What's the matter with that, fam? And it's just so, I don't know, it's just so much wicked out here, and it's just, and people think they God, what the book of Obadiah said, that they act like they God, they put themselves up over God. They project themselves as a god. And we seeing how the Bible saying how they projecting themselves as a god. And then, I'm doing my little research. I don't know what I'm doing about. They supposed to have went to the moon. Why it was so secret? Why is they acting like they went to the moon, y'all? This should be a world event happening. So why is they playing this game? I don't know. It's a game they're getting ready to play, and so far-fetched, because what's going on in the world, they would have said that when they ever had a special blast like this, they let the American people know. Why most of the American people didn't know until afterwards? The Crafty Council, the Schlick Rick, so think about all this stuff that's going on. We watching this like we watching a TV series of 100,000 episodes. So we on season 50 right now. And we're going to see how this plan out, man. We're going to see how these things are going to manifest into what the scriptures say or what man say. Because right now, this is going to tell this how this world is going right now, y'all. This is going to tell if the Bible is the truth or if the Bible is a lie. This is what it's going to tell. This is all it's going to manifest up to be. Then the ones that say they don't believe in the Bible and it doesn't come true, then you can point and say, I told you so. But the one believe in their heart, holy and stand firm in it, when they get their blessing and whatever, and you get your damnation, well, you stupid fool, we done told you. But we're going to see how all this manifests into reality, y'all. We're going to see what it looked like when the smoke and the fog disappear. Then it's going to be a new, it's going to be a new way of seeing things, a new way of doing things. And a new way of reacting to things. The earth is given to the wicked, y'all. And you're seeing all this wickedness coming out. And nobody ain't even stopping this wickedness. Oh, we gotta go through legislation. And we already know everybody that we elected office and they put their hand right to the Constitution, we should get them and put them all in prison and let everything lay out. If you found guilty on anything, you don't do your time or whatever crime you do, you got to pay for it. And if you didn't do nothing, then you good to go. I think that everybody in Congress, the Republican, the Democrat, everybody that swore on the Constitution that they supposed to look out for the common people should get locked up. And then the common man and common woman be the judge. But we put all our energy and all our mindset and all these things on people that we thought they gonna do good for, but they dropped the ball. Y'all, the people in Baltimore and Maryland, I want y'all to really listen to this. You know, I know for a fact that we're not killing each other like that, like that, like that, like that. You know what I'm saying? There's some other crafty counseling going on in Maryland that we don't even really see and trying to understand. We look at it like it is like it's our fault. But I want to let the world know how crooked, how the crafty council work all angles and how they continue to oppress us, especially the people around here in Maryland. Let's analyze.
This is how police have been systematically abusing black men in this country for literally hundreds of years. And I just, the former Baltimore officer who I did an interview with, that still rings in my ears, where he's white and he said, even if they put us into white areas, we had to get a quota of arrests. We didn't want to arrest white people because they could turn out to be powerful. We'd always go to the black neighbors, no matter where you were assigned, and just arrest people. Who cares? You got to make the quota because it's part of your job. And he said, did you think all black people in this country were lying all this time? No. We abuse them. And because it's partly because of racism, partly because they have no power. And so that's the reality of America. And the only people who deny it are the ones kind of like that reality and don't want to get woken up to it, and they just want to say, hey, look, let the cops do what they're gonna do. We need cops and law and order. And then whenever you do law and order on somebody on their side and go, hey, maybe maybe Trump or one of his cronies should be arrested for their corruption instead of, no, we don't want law and order. Oh, I see. So you just wanted to be able to brutalize minorities in this country and not be discomforted by it. And that's what you hired the cops to do. So that's just the reality of America. This is one of the hundreds of cases we've covered alone, let alone all the ones that are out there that we haven't had a chance to cover.
See, y'all, if you got white police officers saying this, and you already on top of racism, and they already know that we ain't even have a nation among ourselves to govern in ourselves, y'all. These people do anything they want to because we ain't got no people around the gates and we ain't got no strong leaders and backbone that held us up as a nation. And the ones that trying to do it, y'all always giving them backlash or hard time or some kind of insults or criticism, but y'all ain't doing nothing. All y'all doing is trying to break down the process of how your nation and the people in your nation trying to build your nation from the ground up. And half of y'all don't know, we already at the chest. We already at the chest. Y'all so much in a delusional state and want to keep continue acting like this is not for real. This is not happening. This is not what this is about. So what it is about? Because as I continue doing the history on who I am and the people that I belong to and what happened to us, all I see is misery. And then I got a nerve to see. Then I got a nerve to see a black man with "Let's Make America Great Again" hat on his head. These guys who wear that hat, they simple, y'all. That's all I'm going to say. They don't know no better. They simple. They slow. They got that helmet on. Because America was great. When America was great again, what was our predicament? Where was our mindset? Where was our nation when America was great? When did we ever just say America is great again? America did great for us in our nation. When? But our people are so molested. This is the mindset of when I say about molested mind. Your whole mindset is molested. And make it so bad, it's so deep cut, just like crack cocaine and heroin. You can't even get off of it. When you get off of it, you start shaking because the addiction is so strong. But the Most High said, when they take them chains around our necks, we'll be destroyed as a people. And that was a prophecy. Did that prophecy come to pass, or is that prophecy been waiting on? It hasn't came yet, or has it already came? We got to know and stop playing these games, man. We got to get our minds and heart together. Start doing them 613 law statutes that the Most High require us to do. And stop looking at each other like we're enemies. Because that's what we was taught, to look at each other like enemies. Instead of, you my brother. my sister and what we can do to be successful together.
Told you, prejudiced bastards, prejudiced bastards, prejudiced bastards, tell them don't, prejudiced bastards, prejudiced bastards, prejudiced bastards, tell them don't. Now let's talk about freedom. The Negro says, I want my freedom now. Others say never. The voice of a responsible, educated, non-biased person says togetherness. There is no other way. Until justice is blind to color, until education is unaware of race, until opportunity is unconcerned with the color of a man's skin, emancipation will always be a proclamation, but not a fact. You see, prejudice squints when it looks, and lies when it talks. Damn fool, tell them don't. 86. Prejudice bastards. Prejudice bastards. Prejudice bastards.
Prejudice bastards. Prejudice bastards.